Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. It is a pleasure to be with you. Happy Martin Luther King Day to wherever you are, wherever you're listening. We thank you so much for making Locked On Grizzlies a part of your day. And I am very thrilled that another person has made Locked On Grizzlies a part of their day. One of our favorite guests from Grizzly Bear Blues, site manager Joel Mullinax, has joined us for this special episode of Locked On Grizzlies. Joe, how are you, sir?
Sean, if I were any better, I couldn't stand it. You know, things are accelerating nicely down there in Memphis with the Grizzlies. It's nice to see the team competing well and going streaking in a good way, not Will Ferrell in old school, but, you know, it's a lot more successful. The fact that they're in the playoff, play-in, whatever you want to call it, hunt, about a sixth of the way through the season is a massive success considering all the things that have been going on in terms of the NBA as a whole and then obviously their roster individually. To lose Ja, Jaren, and Justice for as many games as they have and to be in this position is impressive. And I think that's a testament to the culture that the organization is building, the roster that's already in place, guys stepping up, and the coaching staff finding ways to make it work.
Agree completely, and we're going to cover all that in this episode with Joe. In the first segment, I'm going to talk about, obviously, the Grizzlies starting to feel the impact of COVID, but thankfully, one thing that certainly is a positive right now is Ja is back. We'll talk about that in the first segment. In the second segment, we'll talk about the rookies emerging and Desmond Bain and Xavier Tillman and how good this defense has been. And in the third segment, we'll discuss if Jonas Valanciunas is out for an extended time, how the lineups might look, as well as the significance of MLK Day, obviously, in Memphis with the Grizzlies playing. But Joe, again, thank you so much for joining us. But let's get right to it. So, you know, Joe, obviously about 2 weeks ago, it seems, the Suns were playing the Wizards. Know that the Sixers were the first team, I believe, that it had, you know, an actual positive case. Elk may have been the first one in health and safety protocols. But to get to the point, the Grizzlies this week have already had their first game postponed. Now it seems like that they are being more impacted with Jonas Valanciunas and health and safety protocols. There's a lot of indications that put today, as of this time, today's game in question. Not just with the Grizzlies, though. Overall, your thought process of how the league is handling COVID, do you think this is something that will get with time? And just, you know, how do you think it could impact the Grizzlies going forward, you know, in the near future?
Well, as far as the way the league has handled COVID, obviously nowhere near the success of the bubble. And I think that that's a fair point to make, that they had this rousing success down in Orlando and people just assumed that that would be the way, you know, whether it was regional bubbles, or I know Chris Harrington talks about his archipelago of bubbles, which as a geography teacher, I appreciate the archipelago reference. You just assumed that they would put safety first, but that was never my assumption. And the reason for that is there's a line that you walk, especially in a capitalist or somewhat capitalist situation like America is, where you're trying to make as much money as possible. And right now, because there are no fans in stadiums or arenas, these leagues are bleeding money. And I know that that's hard for people to understand because it's millions upon millions upon millions of dollars. I mean, one of the Morris twins make what? $16 million each at this point? Like, it's monopoly money in the NBA. You just assume that everybody is going to be fine, but it's not like they all have this vast amount of reserves in terms of their wealth. And the fact that 40% of revenue is gone because there is no gate, there are no ticket sales, that's 40% of your league that's not able to be funded the way that it was before. So you have to fundamentally change the way that you're doing business. And it leads to players and owners having to make deals with the devil in terms of you are going to risk your health, given the data that you have in front of you, and not having the bubble be that safe place where you know you're able to keep the spread to a minimum, if at all, in exchange for the ability to have a full or close to full season, the ability to start your season right around Christmas, which is always such a peak time for the NBA in terms of advertising and revenue from television ads. But that's also right in the peak of the spike that we're currently experiencing throughout the country because of people spending time with their families during the holidays. The virus doesn't care about your mom or your grandma. Oh, that's your grandma. I'm not gonna go to you from your grandma because that's just not nice. Like, that's not how this works. So I think that they made a choice to maximize the money as much as possible, to keep the business afloat as much as possible. You know, sometimes you read people having think pieces like, this is why the season never should have happened. Okay, then the NBA, as you know it, will cease to exist. And that doesn't mean that they wouldn't come back, but that does mean that you're going to see a vastly different product. A lot of people are going to be out of jobs. It's just not as simple as shut it down and don't play. And if it was, they would do it because that is the safest thing to do. But you have to walk a line as a business in terms of trying to find the way to minimize the damage that is going to occur to you while also finding a way to keep it as safe as possible. And because they've chosen this route, they have gained some revenue that they didn't expect to have. Because remember, the original plan, Sean, was to start this game, start today, right? This was supposed to be the launching point. That's what they talked about in the bubble. And that was, you know, in an alternate universe, you and I are previewing the first game of the season for the Memphis Grizzlies. But that's not what they chose to do. They decided to maximize their money, and I don't fault them for it, but there are consequences for choices. If they had chosen to wait until Martin Luther King Day, it might have been safer for them in the long run, but they also would have made less money. Now they have more money in their pocket, but they are facing the same issues that the NFL faced and Major League Baseball faced, and they're postponing games and they're moving things around, and people are at risk at a greater scale than they would have been, especially if they were in a bubble, but even if they had delayed the start of the season. So I think that people that are criticizing the league for doing this at all have a worldview that isn't realistic when it comes to the size and scope of these business ventures that are these professional leagues. But at the same time, it's fair to critique and criticize the way that they've responded, how they define contact tracing, the fact that Jonas Valanciunas is on this health and safety protocols list for the second time in a week. And you see all of these setups and you wonder, obviously they have a clear definition of it, but how are they finagling it? How are they allowing for it to say, okay, Jonas was around Carl Anthony Towns who tested positive. They defended each other. That's a close contact. But X player Desmond Bane wasn't around Carl Anthony Towns enough to be a close contact, although they played against each other. Like, are you measuring the minutes they're on the court, the amount of times they're within that 6 feet? Who has that job? It sounds like a very difficult job. So it's just very convoluted. And this is a bed that the NBA made for themselves. So they have to figure it out. Do they suspend the season for 2 weeks? I don't know that it makes sense at this point. Do they jump the line for the vaccine? I don't know that that would be the right call in terms of PR. For the business, it would be the right call. But even then, how many are these guys actually going to get the vaccine? And then, like I said, the optics of jumping the line would not be very good considering all the issues with the vaccine rollout. So it's a mess, and it was always going to be a mess. But you have to decide what is best for your organization. And I think the NBA watched Major League Baseball take its lumps. They watched the NFL take its lumps. They watched both of those seasons end, even though it wasn't the prettiest ending, and they decided to go that route. And, you know, they, like I said, they have a little more jingle in their pocket now, but they also are suffering the consequences in terms of their players having a little bit more freedom, or, you know, the opposite of that, they're more susceptible to infection because of the fact that they're traveling so much, that they're in their markets and they're not inside the bubble.
And it is a situation where you're a bit, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. And it makes me wonder, Joe, you know, at some point you are having these positive cases, you know, as well. It's, you know, contact tracing may be what is making these games, you know, postponed due to these rosters, you know, getting shortened. But the other thing that comes to my mind.
And I do think that that's important to point out, Sean. Sorry to cut you off. I do think that's important to point out. Because I don't know, I don't think I've shared this. I was in quarantine for a couple of weeks because of contact tracing. I had a meeting with somebody who had the virus, and I was deemed a close contact. So I was in quarantine for 2 weeks, but I tested negative. I never had symptoms. But this was before they redid the guidelines, and I still had quarantine those full 2 weeks, even after a negative test. So I think that that is important to understand. You see Jonas's name come up on that list, and you say, oh, my God, thoughts and prayers, right? You want him to have a speedy recovery. That doesn't necessarily mean that he has the virus. That means that he has been deemed a close contact with somebody who does have the virus, in this case, Karl Anthony Towns. More than likely. And again, that's speculation in and of itself. So I do want to point that out. And it's possible a lot of people already understand that, but I have read some things online where they say, oh my gosh, that team has an outbreak. And that's not necessarily true. It just might be that they're all in that contact tracing. They're not able to clear protocols yet. They don't necessarily have the virus.
And that's the other thing that, you know, I wonder when it comes to this virus that, you know, what happens if a player were to have serious complications from it? You know, we really haven't seen that. The player Keontae Johnson, I believe his name is, from Florida. I cannot remember what occurred to him. We certainly obviously don't want that to happen. But what occurred with him, obviously, with collapsing on the court earlier this year, if COVID were to lead to the hospitalization of a player or something like that, we've not seen that in professional sports. Does that completely change things, Joe? You don't want that to happen, but it seems like that's another risk that, you know, is there as well. You don't want to talk about it, but just wonder if that changes things.
It can. I mean, again, it's such a tricky conversation to have, right? Because, you know, for every stat that you point at, that's, or every article, every interpretation by a doctor of, you know, the long-term effects, all the things that we don't know about this virus, you have the realization that there's people that have it that don't even know they have it, right? And obviously they could still be contagious, but, you know, they never show symptoms. There's just so much we don't know that makes it scary. And I think that that's understandable. And again, 400,000 people as of this recording, we're probably getting even closer to that number. You know, that's drastic. You know, that's something that really, you can't just let that number numb you to the fact of the loss and the sheer amount of death that has happened over the past year. It's really a terrible, terrible thing. And like I said, you can't just shut down because it'll completely eliminate your business. There's so many small businesses that have failed, and the national, you know, the federal government, and this isn't a politics podcast, but the fact is there has not been support on a grand scale to save a lot of these businesses that have gone under. Just because the NBA is as big as it is, if they were shut down in March and they never restarted, the NBA would cease to exist. Like, it just would. And that's something, you know, that's a lot of jobs that are out. That's a lot of money lost that you can have that debate. Is it worth it? And I don't know that this is the time and place for that conversation. But I do think it's fair to say, like we did earlier, you know, you make your choices and you deal with the consequences. If you bubble up and you decide to do it as safely as possible, that, you know, that the bubble itself, you heard about the mental health of players and being away from their families for months at a time and how the players didn't want to go into a bubble again. So here's the guys that people are arguing for in terms of safety, saying they should be in a bubble to protect them. And the players on a majority scale didn't want to bubble up for the season. So I think that it's important to point that out too. You know, they chose this together. The players and the owners together made this decision. And now they're dealing with the consequences of it. Again, the business is a little bit more solid than it was in the bubble. But at the same time, the health and safety stuff, that definitely has taken a step back. And there's a line that you walk in terms of trying to balance those two things.
That's very true. And you just, at the end of the day, you certainly hope for the best. But moving on to a little bit more positive subject is, you know, obviously, you know, up in the air are the Grizzlies games, you know, tomorrow. Hopefully not too many more will be impacted. And a big reason why I'm in here hoping for that is because Saturday night was the return of John 2 days before, you know, 3 weeks since he had gotten injured. That was the, you know, best scenario possible timeline at the time of the injury. I'm no surprise that he's back though, but Joe, just, you know, overall the impact of Jaw and you know, the comments last night, you know, really struck me when it was talked about Jaw being inspired by his teammates being inspired by him, just the passion that you see, you know, seeing Jaw come back so quickly. What does that, it probably tells you all that you need to know about Jaw, but just how impactful and significant is it to have him back much quicker than many had anticipated?
Well, on the court, it's massive, right? You could see that just from him physically being there. Even though he wasn't fully himself, he had some finishes at the rim that he normally would have gotten that he did not get in the game against Philly. But I do think that you have to acknowledge the strength of him as a person, right? And to me, his leadership was the main thing that I saw out of the eight or so games that he was out. The fact he was so engaged with his teammates, he was paying attention on the bench, he was coaching guys up as they came off into huddles and timeouts. He was actively participating instead of, you know, just choosing to not go on road trips or choosing to stay home. If Ja Morant didn't want to go on that road trip, he probably wouldn't have had to, right? He could have said, I'm just going to stay in Memphis, stay with my family, do the rehab. I mean, look at Kyrie Irving, right? And obviously somewhat different situations, but, you know, Kyrie just kind of skipping out on things and going to a birthday party and having to go into quarantine, and James Harden now, right, who was in Houston until he wasn't, and all the ways that ended. You know, here's a young 21-year-old man who didn't do that. He went on these trips. He was actively participating with his teammates, and that's a testament to his leadership. That's a testament to his maturity and his love for basketball. I wrote about Desmond Bane earlier this week, or last week, I guess now it is, over at the blog, and I talked about how, you know, this is a group of guys, and I'm paraphrasing Ron Rivera, the coach of the Washington football team, because he said this in his end-of-the-year presser. You know, you don't want guys that love being professional basketball players. You want guys that love playing professional basketball. And that makes all the sense in the world to me. And to me, Ja Morant is a guy that loves playing professional basketball. He loves the competition. He loves the thought processes that go behind it. You know that, Sean. You said in those press availabilities, and when you ask him a question that, you know, touches on something that he's interested in, you know, he can go into depth and explain to you the ways that he read the defense and the levels behind it, and his mind goes almost as fast as his legs, if not faster, and that is really impressive considering what an athlete he is. So, you know, we could talk about his play in transition and how he made the team better. I think Desmond Bane, you saw some flashes of him in transition that were better because Morant was there. Morant improved Bane's play in that way. And you could go up and down the list. Several players were in that boat. But I think to me, what stood out the most throughout the entire process, and I think you could tell that Ja had grown from the experience, is the fact that his leadership really developed. And those guys believe in him. You know, they believe in him not just as a player, but as a person. And to have that type of character and that kind of leadership on your team, again, at the age of 21, that's just something that really is impressive and something to really value, because that's what's going to get them over the hump eventually. It may not lead to wins this year. Ja Morant may make some mistakes and it'll cost them games because he's still young and he's coming off of injury and all those things. But, you know, in the long run, that stretch of games that may have been frustrating for Ja, and it sounds like it was, that's going to pay off in the long run, not just for him, but for the team. And it starts with Morant moving forward, as everybody knows. So I think, again, you can talk about the X's and O's, the transition play, playing off of the pick and roll. There's all sorts of things that Morant does for this team from a basketball standpoint. But from a leadership standpoint, I think he's grown by leaps and bounds over these last few weeks, and that's going to pay off tremendously down the road.
And I think your answer hits the nail on the head, is that both his what has happened with him being, you know, not able to be on the court, and now that he's back on, it influences so many things both on and off in positive ways. But speaking of positive things, there certainly has been plenty positive developments with Ja Morant out from everybody that has been available on the roster. Coming up, we're going to talk about one of Joe's favorite subjects from this season so far, the rookies, as well as the improved defensive play of the Grizzlies on the other side of this break. The new year is here, and obviously that means for many of us, New Year's resolutions have been made. But one thing that I can tell you can help out your resolution, a small addition to your day that can offer plenty of health benefits, is Built Bar. Built Bar is the candy bar, is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, and it's a very versatile part of your day. You can have it for breakfast, you can have it for an afternoon snack, before or after a workout, when you're listening to your favorite Locked On Podcast Network show. Whenever you choose to add it to your day, it's going to add the healthy benefit that many of us want. You can also go to BuiltBar.com and you can have a variety of different tastes to choose from. Used to, there was only 12 tastes. Now there's 18 different flavors to choose from when it comes to BuiltBar.com. Plus, if you go there now, you can get 20% off your next order from Built Bar using the promo code Locked On. But I can tell you this with confidence, no matter how you choose to add it to your day, when you do, it's going to become a permanent part of your day because of the taste and the benefit that it offers. Again, go to BuiltBar.com, 18 different flavors to choose from, and if you use the promo code Locked On, you'll get 20% off your next order from Built Bar. . 2020 is over. It's time for a fresh start and a few more wins. If you're betting this year and want more wins, listen to Locked On Bets with your boy Q and Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports. They are picking college basketball, football, and NBA locks all winter long. Subscribe to Locked On Bets wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to Locked On Grizzlies. So before I get into this question, I want to provide a warning. In the answer to this next question, if Joe starts speaking a little bit louder or calls anybody cowards, please do not be offended. It's just how he answers when it comes to this specific player. And of course, that is Desmond Bain, someone that you've seen Joe and many others talk about over at Grizzly Bear Blues. But Joe, just, you know, overall, the Grizzlies, again, have hit, it seems like so far, have hit a home run with the duo that they drafted. Of course, Desmond Bane, the overall advancement in his skill set, the threes are getting tougher to find, but he's still finding ways to contribute. And then obviously, as we've seen, the play of Xavier Tillman stepping up last night in JV's absence. Nothing in particular he does elite, but I just don't see him ever make mistakes, and that's so valuable. Your overall assessment of these rookies and just how excited are you to see this duo making the impact that they are?
Oh, I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled because they're both on four-year contracts, essentially. Obviously, Desmond Bane, you could argue, is the best value in the entire NBA, being that third, or excuse me, from the NBA draft, I should say, being that he's that 30th overall pick, so they have two team options on him in the third and fourth years on the contract that are like, you know, $1.8-1.9 million. So he won't hurt your cap moving forward. And then you have Tillman, who was a second round pick. So you had a little more leeway to how you negotiated that contract, and Tillman signed a 4-year contract. So you have these two guys locked up. They clearly can play basketball. They were good in college. They're good now. No surprises. I think with Bain, cause we have a larger sample size on him at this point, when you look at Bane, and you're right that his three-point shot has not been as consistent because he hasn't had as many opportunities, but I mentioned this on Twitter, and I was going to write about it if I had found the time, and I've also written about Bane a lot lately, so maybe I should take a breather on that front. But I do think that they need to do a better job getting him opportunities, because except for a time or two last night, they didn't really have against the Philadelphia 76ers on Saturday night, they didn't really have set looks for Bane aside from him standing in the corner. Now, they ran him once or twice off a couple of off-ball screens to try to get him open looks, and that should happen more. But when you watch the way they use Grayson Allen, for example, Grayson Allen gets a lot more opportunities in the pick and roll. He gets a lot more chances to kind of step into shots in rhythm than Desmond does. Desmond just kind of hangs out in the corner. So I'm not as interested in Grayson Allen as Taylor Jenkins is. Coach Jenkins clearly likes Grayson Allen a good bit. I think Desmond Bane could do what Grayson does better if given the opportunity. But at the same time, you know, especially after the game that Grayson had Saturday night, you kind of understand why Coach would have that perspective. I would play Bane and Melton more than Grayson. But that's, you know, I'm not running the Memphis Grizzlies. Coach Jenkins is on the floor. So I think that they need to prioritize when Bane is in, because Bane still got good minutes. I think when he is in, they need to try to get him off ball screens, try to get him opportunities to get different types of looks. Don't just stand him in the corner, which I think the last time you and I talked, Sean, we talked about how he hasn't really done well in the corner this season. I think that will improve, but he's a better shooter from beyond the corners at this stage. So trying to get him more looks in that area. As far as Tillman, to me, Gorgui Dieng, as long as Tillman is healthy, shouldn't play again for the Memphis Grizzlies. I think that Tillman should be the backup five. I've always had that opinion, even before seeing Tillman was this level of player or able to contribute at this level, because I believed in this season, as Zach Kleiman put it, as a data accumulation season. You're trying to figure out exactly what you have. And if there's one player on this roster that you know, A, what he is, and B, that he's not going to be a part of your long-term plans more than likely, it's Gorgui Dieng. Dieng's either going to be part of a trade before this trade deadline happens here in a couple of months, or he's going to be gone in free agency unless you get some bargain deal with him. We just talked about Tillman signing a four-year deal. They signed Jonte Porter to a four-year deal. Again, they have outs on that because of all the injury stuff. They signed Killian Tilly, and they have his restricted free agency rights. So if all of these young bigs come to fruition the way that they hope, there's simply no room for Gorgui Dieng on this roster. So I don't see him being around long-term. Tillman is clearly going to be around long-term. He's a better defender in terms of his movement laterally. He understands passing. He's a good facilitator offensively. That's one of the main reasons they drafted him. And as you alluded to, he doesn't do anything at an elite level. Like, I would say Desmond Bane is an elite three-point shooter. Tillman is not elite, but he's like the De'Anthony Melton as a big in that he can do everything for you. He can play defense. He can play in transition a little bit. He can run off the pick and roll in a good rim run. He hit a three against Philly. He has a game that is malleable. It fits with all sorts of different lineups and different paces. And I think that the way that he plays the game at such an intelligent level makes a lot of sense for the Grizzlies moving forward. So I think they hit a home run with both picks. I think they are great values. But I also think that they enable the team to look at their roster maybe even a little bit sooner than we thought and say, okay, if we know Desmond and Tillman are good and they can help us now, does that mean that we can move on from a Gorgui Dieng and a Grayson Allen? Probably not Grayson Allen because Coach Jenkins loves him so much. But if the front office wants to take away that toy, you know, financially speaking, I think Dieng and Grayson Allen and a first round pick or two for Zach LaVine works financially, you know, and I'm not advocating that they do that because, again, Kleiman himself said this is a data accumulation season. You have a pretty small sample size at this stage and you still haven't seen what this team looks like fully healthy. So I'm not ready to say, let's go get Zach LaVine, let's go get Bradley Beal if possible. I'm not at that stage, but at the same time, this team is pretty deep. And do you really need 14 guys on the team when you have an opportunity potentially to improve it via trade this year? I think that that conversation is not as crazy as it was 6 weeks ago, but at the same time, I think we need a lot more information to decide if that makes sense. And thankfully, we have another month or so, again, if COVID doesn't take it from us. We have some more time to gather more information. Jaren and Justice should be playing here in the next couple of weeks, you would assume. And we can start to see what this team looks like healthy. It's possible they don't need to do anything, and they're pretty darn good the way they are. But again, if the depth is as good as we think it is, do you really need to be 14 deep? I think that's a fair question.
And as you know, we've had this conversation, you know, to different extents yesterday. On Saturday with a former Locked On Grizzlies host, Mark King. You and him had talked about trade scenarios myself. And I think that we all came to the conclusion that, you know, whether or not the right time is now, probably still need to wait. At some point, the quantity that you enjoy has to be consolidated to quality for you to really move forward. And in a future episode, that's something that we'll certainly discuss more of, you know, as we get closer to the trade deadline. But one thing that certainly will allow for that conversation to happen of a potential trade that makes sense to really upgrade this roster now is how well this defense is playing, Joe. You know, me and you both over the past week have wrote articles about how this is becoming an identity of the team, especially with their ability to create turnovers, their deflection, their perimeter play. But the thing is that, you know, how much do you actually believe in the quality of this defense? You know, when you consider, you know, who the Grizzlies have been without, it's amazing that this has been their identity. However, they have been playing, you know, a pretty manageable part of the schedule. They're a top five defense right now. I don't necessarily know if that's the case, you know, as they face tougher competition. I do think it is fair to say, though, that in support of our best offensive talents, the one strength of this depth is its defense, and that really is exciting. And Taylor Jenkins can make a difference through his defensive coaching. How much do you believe in this defense to the point that that could really be a strength of ours to allow for us to maintain course in a playoff push?
And another positive of that depth is the fact that, once again, because this was the case last year too, I think only Ja Morant played more than 30 minutes a game last year. Nobody right now is averaging more than 30 minutes a game playing for the Grizzlies. So it allows for you to have maybe a little more energy, especially late in games, to get those defensive stops. With Morant out in particular, and I wrote about this, as you alluded to, the fact is they slowed down a little bit, Sean. You know, you hear Coach Jenkins talking about getting out and running a lot. they didn't do that as well as they have earlier on with Morant on the floor. And I think that was by design to an extent. I don't want to say they went full grit and grind because they didn't, but I do think they slowed down some. I think that they knew that they didn't have offensive talent to the level of some of the teams they were playing, even with the injuries. I point out the Brooklyn Nets, for example. People like to say the KD and Kyrie didn't play. Well, you're right, they didn't. But essentially, without Spencer Dinwiddie, the same team that had a pretty good showing in the bubble played. Caris LeVert showed up for that game, and Memphis was still able to pull it out there at the end, I believe. I think that you look at a team that adjusted. They figured out that this was how they were going to survive, keep their head above water, and they bought into it. And they had energy. They had players contributing in ways that we didn't anticipate, like Tyus Jones as an on-ball defender, even fronting bigs, trying to help in the post. He did things defensively that I didn't think he was capable of. And that's a testament to Tyus, and that's a testament to a lot of the schemes and ideas that Coach Jenkins has implemented. So I think that part of it was they changed the way they played somewhat. They would still take transition opportunities when they came, but they really did hunker down on defense. They didn't rush things offensively when they didn't need to. They tried to limit their mistakes, and that's how they kept their heads afloat above water. They were capable of making those adjustments. Now with Morant back, Ja's not some awful defender. You know, he's below average to average, depending on the day. But with Ja back, he's naturally going to get out and run more. And of course, you want Ja to get out and run more. But that likely means your defense is going to slip a little bit because you're going to have more possession. They're going to have more opportunities to score, even if you protect the basketball as well as the Grizzlies did, especially in that Philly game, especially in that first half. You know, when you're playing with pace, you're naturally going to give up more possessions to your opponent because you're, you know, moving faster through your own offense. So I don't expect those defensive numbers to stick, but I do think they can be an elite offense long term and be an average defense. You know, that wasn't necessarily something that I saw coming, especially this season. I mean, Justice Winslow and Jaren Jackson Jr. in theory are plus defenders. So you add those two guys to this rotation, and you're looking at a group that can maybe be a top 5 to 10 offense, a top 10 to 15 defense, and you're talking about a playoff team in the Western Conference, and that would be a success considering how your two best players are 21 years old.
And the other question that I'll ask you is this, Joe. You know, we are getting close to, I think we're about at the 80, yeah, around the 85 game mark of seeing Taylor Jenkins as a head coach. So, you know, basically we're right at a full season of seeing, you know, proof of what he is coming into this job. One of the things that we've consistently heard is his attention to detail as being a strength. But do you feel that when it comes to his ability through X's and O's to really add value, do you feel that he seems to certainly, a strength of his coaching approach would be defense? Would that be fair to say, especially with how well this team did without their stars?
I would say so. I think that's fair. Again, you can get young guys to buy into it if they're having success, and you can sell them on the fact, Dylan Brooks embodies it, that defense travels, and you can be a very good defender without having elite athleticism. You don't have to be some remarkable jump out of the gym, laterally quick as a cat player to be a very good defender. Sometimes you just have to give a damn, right? And that's something that you can control. And you hear Coach Jenkins and lots of coaches talk about that, the idea of controlling your effort and your attitude. A lot of defensive success, especially in the NBA, is effort and attitude. You know, all of these coaches have schemes and ideas for, you know, deflections and steals, but you have to execute it and you have to be willing to put in the effort to do it. It's a lot more fun to play offense than defense. But if you can get a group of guys to buy into your team concept, if you can build a roster that has length, that has a basketball IQ, you know, Xavier Tillman, to me, that's one of his greatest strengths. He may not have the physical ability of other bigs and he may be undersized, but he can see passing lanes before they actually come open. He can read rotations defensively. He can pick off a situation where a guard tries to attack the basket and he intercepts a pass. You know, you saw that several times. Ja Morant there late in the game intercepting a pass. That happened multiple times from multiple players. So it's something that you can improve with film and film study. It's something that you can do without being, obviously Jaw is an elite athlete, but it's something that you can do without having a specialized talent in terms of leaping ability, in terms of explosive fast twitch movement. You can be a good defender and a good team defense if you care and you're willing to put in the time and the effort necessary to execute. And I think that's, again, a testament to Coach Jenkins, but it's also a testament to this group of guys that have bought into one another, that bought into the opportunity that the injuries provided them, those role players, and still provides them in a couple of cases. And they understood that if they were going to have success, they were going to have to adjust the way they played a little bit or buy in even more to that defensive end of the floor. And it paid off for them. So I do think that you see moving forward a bit of a drop off defensively because the pace is going to pick up. But at the same time, you have a group of guys that saw it have success. And I think that that's the best thing for a young coach, because you got to remember, Jenkins is one of the youngest coaches in the NBA. When you institute a scheme or you put in a game plan and it works, that builds up credibility for you. You know, the next time you're in a spot that something's a little more questionable or maybe a player disagrees with it, they'll think back to those times that it worked and they'll say, okay, let's give them a shot. Let's give this a try because it worked last time with coach. So, you know, every time that a game plan is successful, every time this team overachieves, it's another feather in the cap of Coach Jenkins as he builds up a rep for himself, not just as a player's coach, but as a coach that knows what he's doing in terms of X's and O's.
Agree completely. And that is something else that, you know, will come to, you know, light here over the next few games when the Grizzlies do play again. Of course, you know, as soon as they get Ja back now with Jonas Valanciunas in health and safety protocols, will be interesting to see how long he may be out. How do the Grizzlies adjust with him out? And also, we will discuss the significance of the MLK Day game in Memphis with Joe once we return here on Locked On Grizzlies. And then there were four NFL teams remain after this week's NFL playoff games. And of course, that means the most exciting time of the year when it comes to football, the championship games. So many fun opportunities to watch and have fun and join. But what if there was a way for you to add to your fun and also profit at the same time? Same concept comes to the NBA season getting in full swing now with hockey season as well. Well, there's only one place to go, to enjoy, and one place that has you covered when it comes to your wagers, and that's betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner at BetOnline_AG to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON for your sign-up bonus. Hashtag BetOnline. Coming up later this week, we will talk with former Locked On Grizzlies host Mark King, get his takes on the Grizzlies, a great play here in recent days, as well as some fun discussions about what could be next if the Grizzlies were to decide to really make a big move this season in pursuit of really becoming a perennial playoff contender going forward. All that and much more coming up later this week with former Locked On Grizzlies host Mark King. So, Joe, you've been saying it for a few weeks now. Start Desmond Bane. Well, Jaw's back. Desmond Bane was not able to start without Jaw in there.
Whoa. Sorry, Sean. Sorry. I don't mean to cut you off. You didn't finish it.
Start Desmond Bane. You cowards.
There you go. Cowards. That's the line. That's the line. That's it.
So, with Jaw back, now Jonas Valanciunas, it seems like it may be a few games, just, you know, with logic suggesting. So, my thought process is that for the starting lineup, and we'll kind of look at the starting and closing lineup. We'll get to the closing lineup in a minute, but focusing on the starting lineup, Ja, Dillon, and Kyle seem to be givens. My question to you is this. Do you go with Clark and Tillman? Do you perhaps start Bane? Basically, what I'm getting at is, are you ready to take the next step forward and support a starting lineup of Ja, Bane, Dillon, Kyle, and Tillman? Or is there a more advantageous lineup you think is out there to start for the Grizzlies?
I think the most likely scenario, because it's the easiest thing to do, is you would simply just insert Tillman for Jonas, and that be the end of it. And Yang take Tillman's spot as the backup five, and you could pretty much play the same way that you had been playing. if not better, in terms of defense. Obviously, Tillman, you know, I don't want to disrespect Valanciunas' offensive game. Tillman is not the offensive player that Valanciunas is right now. But obviously, Tillman brings more to the defensive end of things. He can move a little bit better. He has a better understanding of those passing lanes. All the stuff that we talked about in the second segment, Jonas is not as strong at those items. So I do think that that makes the most sense in terms of sake of ease. For me, when I watch Kyle Anderson play, Sean, and I know you've talked about this, I'm a big Kyle Anderson fan. I've always liked him as a player. I'm not as big of a fan of his when he's on the perimeter. I think that he is a better basketball player. He's a good basketball player on the perimeter. I think he's a better basketball player when he plays that point forward spot at the four. And that is where I would like to see him. And if that meant Kyle Anderson playing the five and you're going like super small ball, I would be okay with that. Brandon Clark playing the five and then Kyle Anderson playing the four. And that opens up a spot on the wing. So it would likely be Grayson Allen, because Coach Jenkins likes Grayson Allen. And until Grayson Allen's no longer here, which there's no evidence to suggest that's going to happen at this point, I think Grayson Allen will continue to get the look over Melton or Bain. I would rather it be Bain because of the reasons we talked about earlier. I think Bain is an elite three-point shooter. I don't think he's been given the opportunity sufficiently enough to show what he can do in the pick and roll to be that more complete offensive player. Melton, you and I have talked about in the past. We both love Melton and what he does. I would rather it be Bain, but I would rather it be Melton as a starter than Grayson Allen for all of the, you know, positives that DeAnthony brings to the table, that I think he's especially defensively just better than Grayson. So at this point, what I would like to see is a Jaw Bain slash Melton. Again, I could hear an argument for Melton, but it's likely going to be Allen if this happens. Dylan Brooks, Kyle Anderson, Brandon Clark, with Tillman still coming off the bench, because I think that gets your best use of him at this stage. I don't know that he's ready to be a starter. You don't want to rush him into that spot if he's not prepared. I think the most likely thing is either, I mean, Jiang would make sense if they wanted to keep Tillman in that reserve role, or they just bump X to the center starting spot and they have Jiang be that backup. I think that's the most likely thing they're going to do, although I could see him going small just because it would give Coach Jenkins a chance to get his beloved Grayson Allen on the floor.
And Joe, the other thing that I'll ask you, you know, kind of piggybacking off of that, one thing that we saw in Saturday night's game is something that I, you know, personally had been waiting to see, and that was the utilization of Brandon Clark and Xavier Tillman together, because, you know, theoretically, when we are a full roster, that probably is going to be the four and five in your second unit. But just to, you know, your excitement in seeing that, and obviously, of course, that also opens the door of what you're going to see more with Clark and Jaren Jackson Jr., or Tillman and Jaren Jackson Jr., Tillman guarding the lane, but then you start to see what Clark and theoretically, Triple J can do on the perimeter at times with their size. It seemed to offer a lot of positive benefits in a Saturday night's game.
I would say so. I think that that's the future, right? Again, Valanciunas isn't going to be here forever. Jang's not going to be here forever. And I think that we have to keep that perspective. They have all these young bigs that are signed to longer-term deals. And again, Porter may not work out. Tilly may not work out. But Tillman looks like he's going to work out. And he's here, and Brandon Clark is here, and Jaren Jackson Jr. is likely to be here. So you've got those three guys that make, you know, I don't have Jaren's money off the top of my head memorized, but between Clark, Tillman, and Jaren, I would bet that they make a fourth of what Jonas and Gorgie make. And obviously on their next contract, they probably won't make the money they're making now. But you get my point. They've constructed their roster in a way that they can, you know, maximize the value of their front court pieces without having to overpay anybody coming back. And that's, except for Jaren perhaps, and that's valuable. So to me, if you see that having success sooner than you'd expect, it allows for you to move on from one, if not both of those players, if you see fit, maybe a little bit earlier than you want. Like I said, that we don't know what this team's actually going to look like fully healthy until it's fully healthy. So I don't want to rush to judgment on that, but I do think we have a large enough sample size of the Tillmans of the world to see, okay, I don't know if this guy can be a starter in the NBA, but I know I want to give him as many minutes as possible to find that out, and that will certainly limit Jiang moving forward. It's possible, and you saw it at the end of the Sixers game when Tillman closed the game, you know, it's possible that that's true for Valanciunas as well.
Obviously, the great thing about it is that now with Jaw back, you know, hopefully JB gets healthy. We get past, you know, the COVID impact on the team. The Grizzlies themselves overall, though, being at 500 through their first, you know, through the first six of the season has certainly been a positive development. And the other thing that we have now coming up today, Joe, is probably the most significant game of any regular season schedule in Memphis, the MLK Day game in Memphis, obviously for the significance that it carries with Martin Luther King. But when considering all that's been going on since last MLK Day, obviously it carries a bit of extra significance. Just your thought on that significance, the hope the game, you know, that is played, you know, the hopes that the game's played, and just, you know, where you hope the attention from this goes, you know, again, considering all that's happened over the past several months.
It's been a rough year, right? You know, we began the show talking about COVID, and we end it talking about, you know, the impacts of somebody like Dr. King and a dream that's not fully realized, right? You know, in the preamble of the Constitution, we talk about trying to form a more perfect union. And I think it's safe to say it doesn't feel very perfect right now in the United States for a variety of reasons. The significance of the Martin Luther King Day game for me is first and foremost just remembering the impact that he had and that movement had. You know, he was obviously the most famous piece of it. But so many different leaders, so many different philosophies, so many different styles and tribulations. If you haven't studied the history of that movement, I would highly recommend you do so. And that's a testament to the Grizzlies, you know, the Civil Rights Museum there in Memphis, their partnership that they have. Every year, it seems you read an article or you see a video from an NBA team. And obviously this year with COVID, it's different, but before the pandemic, you know, people going there and talking about the impact that that place had on them. And it had a significant impact on me when I went there and visited when I lived in Memphis. I haven't been since they renovated it. I would love to go the next time I'm in town in the next year or so post-pandemic. I think that it's important to know that the work continues. That dream that Dr. King talked about is still very far from realized. And it's because of a lot of the other things that Dr. King talked about that we don't have enough time on this podcast. You know, there's some speeches that Dr. King gave that maybe wouldn't be as beloved by folks, not as warm and fuzzy as I Have a Dream. But Dr. King was right on a vast amount of the things that he pointed out in terms of the ills of our society and the way that it's played out over the last 50 years or so. I look to the game as an example of service. The way that the Grizzlies organization has handled it has been tremendous over the years. The way that players in the past, and obviously now I believe they had a giveaway or a food or clothing drive. I don't remember exactly what, but I know they had a charity event over the weekend. The symposium they do where they bring in athletes of color to talk about their experiences and moving forward in the country and the conversation about race. I think Ray Allen and Kenny Smith are two of the folks being honored this year. You know, I think about the organization showing how well they represent Memphis in this event. And I think about the city of Memphis as a sign of how far we still have to come in terms of equal opportunity. It's not just about equal rights. It's about, you know, economic issues and giving people from all different backgrounds opportunities that aren't present for them because of the color of their skin or because of their gender, their sexuality. You know, it goes beyond race, but obviously with Dr. King, that's the main focus. And I do believe that we as a country are seeing more than ever before that if you're going to confront that, you need to have honest conversations about it. And I see the way that the Grizzlies handled the day in particular, but the events of the last year, the Black Lives Matter movement, the murder of George Floyd and the ripple effects from all that, I think we're closer than we've been in some time to being able to have those painful conversations because people are going to hear things they don't like, especially people that look like me and you, Sean. We're going to hear things that we don't like to hear because they will not paint a pretty picture for folks that look like us. But I think that it's something that needs to be listened to because, in my opinion, something we've lost or maybe we've never had as a society, as much as I thought we did when I was younger, is empathy. empathy for our fellow man and the journeys that we all walk through in this life. We all have burdens and we all have tribulations, but you know, the fact that there is a historic significance toward a system that has been put in place to hold a specific group of people down because of the way they look, you know, the sooner that a larger group of people comes to terms with that reality, because that is the reality, the sooner that we can see that and listen to the words of Dr. King and other great civil rights leaders and, you know, people that still talk and march and focus on those things today, the sooner we hear those stories and believe them and give them credence and the justification they deserve, the sooner we can heal as a nation. And I'm hopeful that we're closer to that now than we were, you know, several months ago or a year ago. I'm optimistic that the words of Dr. King and the work that people are putting in on the ground and on a national scale is going to do good. But we have to be the change we want to see. And I think that this day is a reminder of that for us, that if we want things to get better, it starts with us in our own communities and with our own children to make those things a reality.
And I agree completely. You know, I'm with you. I've always thought that the Grizzlies did a wonderful job promoting the significance of Martin Luther King, and in a way that, you know, is positive and right, and you know, celebrating those who have worked to continue the dream that Dr. King had. And, you know, I also hope that, you know, like you mentioned, this is a launching pad for conversation, for positivity, for effort, you know, to, you know, it's a very negative time for many reasons right now in the country, but through those efforts, through those conversations, you know, and with unity and positivity, hopefully, you know, continuing to find a way, you know, to get some needed questions answered so that we can move forward and eliminate the wrongs that are, you know, clearly evident still within this society. So it's going to be a special day. Hopefully it will contain a game, but even if it doesn't, obviously the significance of, you know, just how wonderful of a person Dr. King was and the influence that he had, but also from that, the needed, you know, impact on our society to move forward in the best way possible. Hopefully that will still be highlighted in a significant way. But Joe, we now are almost, you know, into, you know, a big stretch for the Grizzlies. You know, I know that you've alluded to it, others have as well. I kind of highlighted it as my big stretch, you know, of the season for the Grizzlies, but a lot of things going on your end, Grizzly Bear Blues, GBB Live, just to get an idea of what people can be looking out for you here over the next a few weeks, in which I know it's going to be a very busy time for you.
Oh, sure. No, on a personal level, my day job, it gets more intense with the weirdest football season in history starting February 4th. My wife and I are expecting our third child here in a couple of weeks. Obviously, the NBA is going full swing. I still have my job as a teacher, so I'm about to enter probably the craziest part personally of my life. But, you know, it's all good in terms of things that are positives. You know, you're talking about it being a tough time, and it's been a tough year for a lot of people in a lot of ways. And, you know, I'm very fortunate to have the opportunity that I do to work with folks like you and everybody else over at GBB and to be in the spot that I'm in. So I'm going to do the best I can to cover the Grizzlies as best I can, as I always have since I've been in this spot. And I know I have a terrific staff made up of folks like you, Parker Fleming, you know, Brandon Abraham, all the folks over at GBB. We're going to continue pumping out great game coverage. You know, you mentioned the GBB podcast network, you know, Starting Five, 3&D, Core Four, GBB Live. We do a lot of different things over at grizzlybearblues.com, and that is a growth point from where I took over the blog 5 years ago to now. I'm proud of the podcast network. I'm proud of our staff. I'm proud of the fact that when you combine quantity and quality, there's nobody else that covers the Memphis Grizzlies that does it the way that we do, and that's something that I'm really proud of. So even as my personal life goes into a complete fifth gear that I'm not sure I have, but I'm about to find out. You know, I'm proud of the work that we've done at the blog. I'm proud of the fact that we have given people, especially in a time, because we haven't talked about this as much, Sean, but you know, the issues with Sinclair and not having YouTube TV, the cord cutters that can't even watch the games. You know, I've had a couple of people say that they depend on GBB just to keep up with the team because they can't watch the games. So that means a lot to me. It really does mean more than anybody knows. I've put a lot of myself into GBB. So the fact that we have the staff we do, it's grown to the way that it has. Folks look to it the way that they do. It means more than anybody will ever know, and I look forward to continuing to do the work as the season grinds forward.
Absolutely, and it's great work, obviously, and you know, it's just it's always wonderful to be able to interact with any of you over at GBB, especially you yourself. I'll keep my comments about Brandon Abraham to myself. Completely kidding. That's a shout out to Brandon Abraham. But all joking aside, it's a wonderful family to be a part of over at GBB.
But Brandon Abraham is a great example, because like with you and Parker the other day. And Saturday night with you and Brandon, whenever you guys are there together, I ask for a picture.
Absolutely.
And that might sound like I'm being goofy or cheesy, but I mean, there was a time when I was at GBB where having a press pass was, you know, in question, you know, whether or not we would have it. And, you know, shout out to Kevin Leip and Tom Lorenzo. Those guys before me did tremendous work getting it, and then Chris Faulkner keeping it. But now, you know, Mark King before you with Locked On, Brandon and Parker. You know, Brandon covers the Memphis Hustle when there's not a pandemic going on. You know, the coverage of the team and the media outreach within Memphis, like I said, with you doing Locked On now, that's a great example of how GBB has grown. So you do us proud, Brandon and Parker do us proud, and I'm a proud blogger papa when I get those pictures of you guys working together at the games. It's good stuff. So keep up the good work, Sean. You know I respect the heck out of you, and you know, anytime you need me, buddy, I'm there.
Well, you certainly, the offer's always extended, and we will have you back soon. And all joking aside, when it comes to Brandon Parker or anything like that, that's what makes the family over there fun, is that we can cut up and joke, but also know how much of a privilege it is to work with each other to give the best coverage out there to you, the listeners and the readers, through Locked On and GBB Live. You can find the show at Locked On Grizz, myself at StatsSAC, the podcast, wherever podcasts are available. Thank you so much to Joe Molinax. Obviously, we will keep you covered here with whatever occurs through the rest of today with updates on the game. Make sure to tune in, obviously, after the game for a post-game podcast. But until then, for Joe Molinax, my name is Sean Coleman. Have a great Martin Luther King Day and enjoy the game if it happens. We'll talk to you again soon here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.